Tell her to take off her jacket after that. Hi. You're very much comfortable. Yeah, it's supposed to be able to come back here and say shurim once more the kollel. So thank you, Rabbi Stamets, for coordinating this. So I thought we would learn a sugya together, which is relevant to this week's parsha. It's of course Parshas Pekudei, and a good portion of Parshas Pekudei takes up the big day kahuna. So just in case you heard the shiur Parshas Tetzaveh, so it should be a chazara. But I think we could talk a little bit about sugyas related to big day kahuna, but particularly with emphasis on halacha lemaisa for us. So what halachas can we glean from the Big Day Kahuna that impact on our day-to-day lives, lemaisa? So the first of the sugyas is a sugya that appears concerning the mitzvah wearing a tzitz. So the Kohen Gadol has to wear the tzitz. And it says concerning the wearing of the tzitz, it has to be a tamid, a mitzvah tamid. He always wears the tzitz. So the Gemara says, he always wears the tzitz. It's not true. The Kohen Gadol goes to the bathroom. He doesn't wear the tzitz. He doesn't go to sleep with the tzitz on. So obviously it doesn't mean that he has to always wear the tzitz. So it's machlekes that to know him how to understand what the significance of that word tamid is. So one of the interpretations the Gemara gives us is that by mitzvah tamid means shlo yasiach da'ite mimenu, that when the Kohen Gadol is wearing the tzitz, so he has to always think about it. It's a very, very holy thing. Kodesh Lashem. So he has to constantly be focusing on the fact that he's wearing the tzitz. He's not allowed to be in the state of hetzach hadas. So Gemara says in the first parak of Maseches Yuma that madoch when it comes to wearing the tzitz, which only has Shem Hashem one time on it. The tefillin, we wear tefillin every day. It has Shem Hashem multiple times in it, many, many more times in the Kodesh Lashem once of the tzitz. So kal v'chomer that we have to be careful not to be mesiach das from that tefillin. So Gemara learns out of din l'dayrus from the word, hoy l'rotzon lam tamid. So tamid teaches us as chadas, so who a dinami, more than who a dinami, it's a kav v'chomer, for sure, that you're not allowed to be mesiach das when you wear tefillin. So Tosfos on the spot is bothered with this kav v'chomer. Tosfos says, I have a pircha to the kav v'chomer, I can uproot the kav v'chomer. That no, the pircha would be that the tzitz, the shame is begiloi, the shame is exposed, Kodesh Lashem, it says it, everyone can see it, whereas by tefillin, where's the shame Hashem begiloi? But because there's a shin, the shin is just one letter, it's not indicative of the entire shame Hashem. And what do you get? Tell me a story that was the shin, and then you have the doll in the back, and Tosfos doesn't buy into the whole story. Tosfos says, that whole thing's not true. When the Gemara says that there were kam v'kam shemus on the tefillin, that's referring to the shemus inside the tefillin, inside the parashias. So Tosfos says, what kind of kam v'kam is this? That the fact that you have to be in the state of lack of eschadas when you ring the tzitz, that's because the Shem Hashem is revealed. But when the Shem Hashem is covered over inside the bias, like, why should that be a kavachomer? That's a gavalik apirach on the kavachomer. So Tosfos says, you're talking right, that the kavachomer is not really such a good kavachomer. The Gemara never really meant this was a din deraisa. If it would have been a real bona fide kavachomer without any pircha on it, so then this would have qualified as a diminator. It's Rabbi Shmuel Omer. Kavachomer is one of the Yigim Amidah Shadar Dereshas Behem. So dinim that are derived from kavachomers have the status like a dinim deraisa. So Taisa says, if this would have been a real bona fide kavachomer without any kashas, then we would have been stuck with this din min haTorah of Heschadas on tefillin. But since the whole thing is pircha, the whole kavachomer is not really a good kavachomer anyway, this whole thing is just a din min derabbanan. It's an asmach to be alma. It makes it sound a little shtark, a little more exciting. It gives the rabbi something to talk about in Parshas Pekudei. Otherwise, if I would have walked in and said, I can talk about Heschadas on tefillin, you would have said, but the rabbi has nothing else to talk about Parshas Pekudei. The answer is no, it's very little to talk about Parshas Pekudei. So, at least when it's Vayakha Pekudei together, you have a fighting chance to find something. You can talk about L'Savar Eshka, about Melech HaShabbos, but Pekudei itself is much, much tougher. So here Tosfos says that this has really nothing to do with tzitz. The tzitz is a din deraisa. Tefillin is only a din midderabana. It's just a nice, cute asmachta. But really midderaisa, there is no iser of hesech hadas. But if you look at the Rambam, when he quotes this din, the Rambam sounds like it's a real din deraisa. The Rambam quotes the kav v'chomer. The Rambam doesn't say, oh, by the way, this is only a derabana, make-believe din. The Rambam sounds like he took the kav v'chomer seriously. So how can you take the kav v'chomer seriously? Isn't Tosfos' pircha very, very solid pircha? So lechora, this nekudas amachleik is the point of contention with the Tosfos and the Rambam. Is this a valid kavachomer min haTorah, or is this pircha that Tosfos points out that in one case the shame is revealed, and in one place the shame is not revealed? So lechora, this hinges upon the following shaila. Yesh lachor, one could raise a question: what is the nature of this issur of hetzchadas? primarily the Yisr of the Tzitz, and then the potential extrapolation to Tefillin. So one can understand this in one of two ways. Either one can understand that the Yisr of Eschadas is like a bit of the Kedushas of Tzitz. So in the case of Tefillin, it's like a steer, it's like a contradiction to Kedushas of Tefillin. But Lamosha, we know that there are many, many dinim that govern Tefillin that have nothing to do with the mitzvah Sanochas Tefillin. The tefillin is a double kodesh, so it has to be treated appropriately. For example, the fact that you can't bring tefillin to the bathroom, that has nothing to do with the mitzvah tefillin. I'm not wearing the tefillin. The tefillin, I'm holding, walking around carrying the tefillin, you can't bring it to a place, that's mavuza. So the redinim that govern the kedushas of tefillin, the cheftz of tefillin, has to be treated as a double kodesh. The tzitz is a double kodesh, has the shem Hashem on it, so it has to be treated with kedusha. So if a person is in the state of eschadas, so that's a stira, that's a contradiction to the Kedushas HaTzitz, or to the case of the Kedushas HaTfilin, is that the nature of the din? Or no? Maybe the din of Heschadas is a bitl to the mitzvahs Levishas HaTzitz, or in the case of Tfilin, it's a bitl to the mitzvahs Anochas Tfilin. That in order to fulfill the mitzvah of wearing the tzitz properly, it's not just enough to physically wear the tzitz. You have to have it, you have to be in the state of a certain mindset. So if you're Mesiach Das or the tzitz, you're not fulfilling the mitzvahs tzitz properly. Or in the case of the extrapolation to the tefillin, if you're wearing tefillin and not paying attention to the tefillin, that's a bitl of the mitzvah's tefillin. So what is the nature of this din of Heschadas? Heschadas, a contradiction to the kedushas, to the cheftza, or is it a contradiction to the mitzvah's hanochas agavra? So if you want to be Reb Chai, you want to be brisk, so you can say gavra cheftza in the same sentence, yeah, everyone knows what I mean. Is it a din the cheftza tefillin, is it a din the gavra, the mitzvah hanochas of the gavra? So the chari, that's the point of the dispute between Taiz and the Rambam. But Taisa says that there's a big difference between the two. In one case, the shame is covered. In one case, the shame is uncovered. Why should that make a difference? So the chora, that's like a kedusha type of a svara. Namely, that the same way you can argue, if I take a pair of tefillin and mamish into the bathroom, that's really bad. If I start to wrap them up, I start to cover them up a little bit, and they're not as exposed, so to speak, so that's less of a steer, that's less of a blatant desecration of the tefillin. So then the halacha said, "Govern, at what point do we say it is a bizoyan, at what point do we say it's not a bizoyan?" But the idea of something being uncovered or being covered, that speaks more to the kedushas hachefts of the tefillin. If you're dealing with the mitzvah's tefillin, in this case, the mitzvah of the wearing of the tzitz, so ma'ech patli, whether it's covered or it's not covered, at the end of the day, tefillin is a greater mitzvah than tzitz. Haraya. How do you gauge mitzvahs? I have no idea how to measure mitzvahs, but this is one way of gauging it. Tzitz only has one connection to Rabbanu Shalom to it, whereas tefillin has kam v'kam, the Shem Hashem is written multiple times. So that shows that the mitzvah's tefillin is a greater mitzvah than the mitzvah of wearing the tzitz. So if you're talking the language of mitzvah, mach papi, whether it's covered or it's not covered, what's up doing anything? If you're talking the language of Kedushas HaChefza, then you can discuss covered versus not covered as being a factor in this equation. And therefore, Tosfos understood that one is covered, one is uncovered, that's a steer to the Kal V'chomer. And therefore, the Kal V'chomer is not real min HaTorah. But if you hold that the nature of the din is a din, mitam, mitzvah, hanocha, mach papi, covered or not covered. If one has one shame and one has 25 shame, so the 25 shame is the greater mitzvah than the one shame. The fact that one's covered, one's uncovered is completely irrelevant to the authenticity of the Kal V'chomer. So the chari, that's the Nekudas HaMachlokes in Taisa. In the Rambam. So this idea as to how to understand Heschadas, again, which began with Hilchas Tzitz, and now is being extended to Hilchas Tefillin, the Raisa, the Rabbanon, now is going to become important when we begin to analyze the parameters of this halachas of Heschadas. So there is a very, very famous kasha that is asked, it's raised already by the Rishonim, the Echvarim for sure, bottom of this kasha. There is a Gemara in the second parak of Maseches Sukkah, where the Gemara talks about the possibility of taking a short nap with one's tefillin on. So generally speaking, go to sleep with tefillin on, that's a problem. Those are issues, potential issues of risks of gufnaki. But to take a very, very short kind of a nap, so the Gemara says, technically speaking, that would be permissible. The Gemara even gives a shiur, less than 100 amas, whatever the particular number of minutes or seconds is, doesn't matter for our purposes right now, but a very, very short, 2-minute nap, meikra, then it's probably okay with one's tefillin on. So the Rosh already quotes a question that was posed to Rabbeinu Yonah. How could you take a nap with your tefillin on? If there's a nisr of Heschadas, the deraisa, the rabbanon, so how in the world can you justify going to sleep even for a split second? In the split second that you're going to be sleeping, you're not going to be yadas and yitfilin. Ein lecha Heschadas gol b'mizeh. So Rabbeinu Yonah said, no, that we misunderstood what Heschadas means. Heschadas doesn't mean that the person's thinking about his tefillin all the time. Every single second he's thinking about his tefillin. How is he supposed to learn? How's he going to daven? Okay? In the old days, people used to go out to work with the tefillin on. So how is it possible a person is going to be sitting and thinking, contemplating the entire day of Kedushas? Well, that's not what Heschadas means. Peskadas, as Rebbe Yoni, means that you're not allowed to have thoughts that are antithetical to one's tefillin. If you start to think about tzchayk mekalas rosh, things that are not appropriate in a mindset of tefillin, therein lies the problem. If you're sitting and learning a tayzin yivamis, that's not heschadas. You're thinking about your job, that's not heschadas. You're thinking about tzchayk mekalas rosh, that's not a problem. That's what the issue of heschadas is. Therefore, when you're sleeping, so what are you thinking about when you're sleeping? Nothing. Your mind's blank. It's shut down. So that's not a violation of heschadas. That's where the Gemara pilpuls. If it's a long nap, then there's chashash of gufnoki. Okay, you have to deal with that. But if it's just a short nap, so then there's nothing to worry about else gufnoki. And the heschadas doesn't pose a challenge. That's how Rabbi Yehuda solves the problem. So the Shagasaya claims that there are other Vishayim who disagree with this. The Shagasaya dug up a Ramban in Sefer Teres Adam and made its way into Shulchan Aruch Savelus, where the Ramban discusses about Avelim wearing tefillin. So generally there's a din, the Gemara says in Brachas and in Sukkah, that an Avel is chayiv in all mitzvahs, an Avel Hobi Keshiva is chayiv in all mitzvahs, but on the first day of Avelim, whatever you define that is another question, but whatever it's called, Yom Rishon, an Avel doesn't wear tefillin. Avel Asla Nich tefillin in Yom Rishon. After Yom Rishon, then the Avel does wear tefillin. So the Ramban writes, B'medibam Amurim, that the Avel in Shiva wears tefillin, that's what's not B'shas Hesped and Bechi, but let's say all of a sudden the people start giving a spade in the base Avel, the Avel starts to break down, he's crying, and very, very upset, agitated. The Ramban said he should take his tefillin off. Why? Because that's a problem. That's a problem of Heschadas. It's being Mesiach Das from the tefillin, and that's a problematic. So comes the Shagasai and says, that's not exactly Schoch Kalas Rosh. If anything, that's the opposite of Schoch Kalas Rosh. And still the Ramban held that that was a problem. So the Shagasai claims that the Ramban disagrees with that Rabbeinu Yonah. Not everyone agrees to that assessment of the Shagasai. It could be that what the Ramban means is that have like kind of neutral thoughts. The guy's working, the guy's sleeping. Those are not per se antithetical thoughts to tefillin. So those are takamuta. That's not called heschadas. Heschadas means is anything that's counter to the tefillin. Anything that is the opposite of what tefillin is trying to accomplish. So that could be either side of your emotional state. If you're a little bit too much chok mekalas rosh, so that's a problem with tefillin. If you're very, very, very down and you're so upset and you're so agitated and you're crying and screaming, that's also called a bitl tefillin. Tefillin not supposed to be that. Tefillin's supposed to be and bakus b'shem and avos Hashem and all that. So if a person is so upset, he's crying and so upset about his relative, so that's also a steer with tefillin. So that also would be heschadas. So it's not clear that the Ramban actually meant that Rabbeinu Yonah is not right. It could be the Ramban and Rabbeinu Yonah are the same team, albeit different spectrums of where the person's mindset is. But Naniach, like the Sheikh Azari for a minute, that there really is that the Ramban really holds that Heschadas is more inclusive than Rabbeinu Yonah, so then Hadu Kush L'Duchta, so then why is a person allowed to take a short nap in one film? That's the Gemara in the Sefer of Sukkah. Why is that Mutar? So Sheikh Azari says he thinks the answer is that the issue of Heschadas has to be some kind of a sheer ladover. One split millisecond, I forgot I'm wearing tefillin, so that's chatos yivis mashate, according to the Rambam, it's an issue of the rice. It's not lo shayach, davar kazeh. There must be some kind of a shear. It's only called Heschadas. You have to a certain amount of time. How much is that shear? So Shai Gassar says, I have no idea what the shear is, but I can tell you one thing. It's longer than the shear that's mutter not to be worried about gufnochi. So whatever the Gemara says, you can sleep with your tefillin for up to 100 amas, so the shear of Heschadas, maybe it's 101 amas. I'm not sure where it is. But it definitely can't be less than the shear of 100 amas, so whatever the shear of gufnochi is. So therefore the Shagas Ayah says that's why the Gemara doesn't bother addressing the Issa of Heschadas, because you're never going to reach that point anyway. So again, that's a very, very interesting approach to that sugya. It doesn't sound that way. The Gemara doesn't say a word about Heschadas in that sugya. So there is another approach that's given to this topic that appears near Chashulchanuch's Tefillin gives his own very innovative approach to this question, which actually circles back to our original Machlekes Taisden and the Rambam. The Chashulchan says that he thinks that the nature of the Isser of Heschadas is only a din in the Bittul Mitzvah Tefillin. He says it explicitly. It has nothing to do with the Kedushas Chavtzah Tefillin. It means if and when you're wearing Tefillin B'Shas Mitzvah, then there's an Isser of Heschadas. Let's say the Moshul, you're wearing tefillin at a time when there's no mitzvah anyway. Let's say the Moshe wearing tefillin on Shabbos and Yontif. So you don't get any mitzvah for wearing tefillin on Shabbos and Yontif. There's a machlokes in the Rishonim. Is there an issur to wear tefillin on Shabbos and Yontif? Is it a ptur? It's possible that according to some Rishonim, you're allowed to wear tefillin on Shabbos if you want to, just they don't gain very much. So what would the din be if a guy's wearing a tefillin on Shabbos and he's Mesiach Das? So the Yoch HaShomer holds, so what? He's not doing the mitzvah anyway. If you hold that Heschadas is a din in the Bizoy and HaKadushas tefillin, so you can't carry tefillin to the bathroom on Shabbos either. Just because it's not Zman Mitzvason, that doesn't detract, they don't lose their Kedushas Heftza because it's not Zman Mitzvason. So the Chashulchan assumes that the Isser of Heschadas only applies b'shas mitzvason. So says the Rosh Hashulchan, the minute that you fall asleep, it's ois shas mitzvason. It's not considered to be shas mitzvason anymore because you can't fulfill mitzvahs in your sleep. One of the basic ABCs of mitzvah observance, the Rosh Hashulchan assumes, not everyone agrees to this, but he assumes that it is impossible to fulfill mitzvahs when you're sleeping. So Tanya Ruchas Tzitzis, it doesn't appear that way. The Bishayim discuss if a person falls asleep with his tzitzis on, is that considered to be an automatic break in the mitzvah that would necessitate a new bracha? So there are many Bishayim who say that no, that you still, it's an ongoing mitzvah, you're still fulfilling the mitzvah. I have fast asleep, that's still called the mitzvah. So it's not 100% clear that everyone agrees to this Rosh Hashulchan, but he writes this way as a bills of the Pshita, that it's not shayach to have mitzvahs when you're sleeping. So he gives a reason why. I don't know whether he meant it literally or he meant it derech malitza. I'm not quite sure, but he says the reason why you can't fulfill mitzvah, it's not shayach to have a kima mitzvah when you're sleeping, is because b'meisim chafshi. The Gemara says that when you're dead, you don't perform mitzvahs. And Chazal said when you're sleeping, that's one portion of the way to being no longer alive. So he says that you're considered to be like a quasi mace when you're asleep, and therefore you're not chayav in mitzvahs. It's a big chiddush. It's a tremendous, tremendous chiddush. We don't say that like Abiyad Halachas. We don't assume the guy's asleep, so that he is. And you don't get mace. Let's say Lemoshe, a guy appoints a shaliach to give a get for his wife, and the shaliach delivers the get at the time when the husband sleeps. You don't say en get leach hamisip. So we don't say that in other areas of halacha. A guy wakes up the morning chis amesim, so he doesn't have to go run to have a new meal and tefillah because he wasn't born Jewish yesterday. So that's a little bit of a malitza that the Rosh Hashulchan is saying. But whatever he meant with that line, so he's clearly taking a stand on our shayla. He's assuming that the mitzvah of the Yisr Veschadas is a function of the mitzvah, not really so much a function of the chetzah. And again, could be that the reason why other Rishayim and other Rechayim didn't want to go down that route, they may have fundamentally disagreed. They may have held that Veschadas is not a function of the mitzvah. They couldn't care less whether you're Yitzim Mitzvah or not Yitzim Mitzvah. If you're wearing tefillin, that's a bizarre. This is the tefillin to be in the state of Veschadas. So I hope part of this entire discussion that we have that permeates of the tefillin gets its beginnings from the sugya of tzitz. So first you have to figure out what Hezchadas applies to the tzitz, what the nature of that din is, and what the parameters of that din, and you have to figure that out. Then you have a fighting chance to figure out how in the world that impacts the Nuchas Tzitzel Lamaisa. There's another aspect of Big Day Kahuna that spills over to Halacha Bizman Hazeh. It happens just by coincidence, also being a Chesvon. I'm going to talk about other things, hopefully, today besides a Chesvon, but the bulk is going to be a Chesvon, if you didn't notice. And that is the following Yishayla. Rashi even makes reference to this. If someone could figure out for me which Rashi's in Pekudei he felt the necessity to repeat what he said in Parshat Tzav and which not, I'm not sure. It's only that one by Tzitz that he feels he has to go over and over and over again, probably because he figured nobody understood what he was talking about the first time. The problem is that nobody, the same people didn't understand. I didn't understand the Parshat Tzav. I still don't understand the Parshat Pekudei either. I had a fighting chance. I was on the plane this morning. I had 6 hours to try to figure out, and I still couldn't figure out what it meant. But so the bottom line is that in the middle of that long Rashi, so he makes reference to a Maimon Chazal that appears in the second Berachah Maseches Zevachim. So the Gemara discusses about when the Kohen Gadol wore the tzitz. So how exactly the tzitz was positioned vis-a-vis the tefillin and vis-a-vis the mitznefes, because the Kohen Gadol he's got a lot of stuff going on in that same general area. He's wearing the tzitz and he's wearing the mitznefes with his hat and he's wearing his tefillin. So the Gemara says Makom Yeshom the Sairah Yanir ben tzitz mitznefes. There's a little bit of a spot, not too much, a little bit of room for very very small pair of tefillin. Our tefillin are humongous compared to where the tefillin were in the olden days. The Gaonim write that tefillin have to be it's tiny, half the size, two etzbos, the Rambam's half the size of the tefillin that we make. Over the years, that tefillin became so big because the sofrim could write. When you write teeny parshas, it's much, much harder. So our tefillin got bigger and bigger and bigger. In Europe, they were, Rambam, you see the old European tefillin there, they're tremendous. In America, they got a little bit smaller, but still, we got a long way to go. We're nowhere near what they were back in the days of Chazal. In terms of size. It's okay. They're all kosher. It's just that different eras have different practices in terms of what makes the sofer most comfortable to do. But the bottom line is, the Gemara says that there was a very, very small spot of the Kohen Gadol's head, uniquely positioned between the mitznefes and the tzitz in order for him to wear his tefillin. There is a big machlekes at Rishayim. Where exactly the tzitz stood in terms of his head, which is going to impact exactly where the spot is going to be. So there was a machlekes in Rishayim, that little head, a little pshat in the Pesach Chumash, the Pesach Vayam Mitzchei Tomid. So where's the Meitzach? Where exactly did the Kohen Gadol wear the tzitz? So some Rishayim say that he wore the tzitz on his Meitzach, on his forehead. That's exactly what it sounds like. So it sounds a little bit from Rashi. And others say that if you look at the Targum, so it translates to Mitzchah as being Beri Noi. It means Beisei Noi, the Gersos. It refers to Beri Nainaim refers to like tefillin, which is Macham Seyar. So it's not 100% clear, was the tzitz all the way in the bottom, or was the tzitz higher up? If the tzitz was higher up in the Macham Tefillin, then you're really, really tight in that area. If the tzitz was a little bit lower, then you have a little bit room to maneuver. Taisus quotes in the beginning of Maseches Yuma from the Riva, who says that if you look really carefully in the Chumash, you'll notice that whenever the Torah speaks about the Kohen Gadol, it speaks about the Mitznefes, and whenever the Torah speaks about the Kohen Hedyot, it speaks about the Mikba'as. L'chur is the same thing. There were four of the big dekuna that the Kohen Gadol and the regular Kohen wore were identical. And the headpiece, L'chur, was the exact same headpiece. So why does the Torah change names? So Tosfos quotes one possibility that maybe, even though it was the same basic piece, one was bigger, one was smaller. That the Kohen Gadol had to wear a smaller size because the Kohen Gadol needed the extra room in order to have the tzitz, in order to wear his tefillin. A regular Kohen didn't need so much room. He wasn't wearing a tzitz anyway, so he just had to have a bigger hat. Whereas the Kohen Gadol, so he had to have a smaller hat because he had no room to wear the tzitz and the tefillin and the hat, because he's going to have, walking with a big shtreimel, he's not going to have any room to put his tefillin to put the tzitz on. So I've commented on this many times. I don't mean this literally, but I could say, you know, between friends, I could say it's the same humor, same vein, that you see from this Tosfos that the firmer you are, the more kaddish you are, you wear a smaller yarmulke. As the Kohen Gadol got bigger and bigger and bigger, so his yarmulke got smaller and smaller and smaller. A regular Kohen wasn't so kaddish. He needed a big fat yarmulke. A big Kohen Gadol, he's kaddish l'Hashem. What does he need such a big yarmulke? Well, he knows he's kaddish l'Hashem. So he did sit, says kaddish l'Hashem. He doesn't need, but he can take it or leave it, whatever you want to do with that piece of information. Okay, well, we'll go back to that story. So the Gemara makes this whole fuss about the Kohen Gadol having to have some extra room that's not going to be interference between his mitznefes and the tefillin. So the Rishon Mabar with the Kasha, why is this such a tumah? Let him just put on the mitznefes and put the tefillin on top of the mitznefes. What's the big deal? Why do you have to make the mitznefes smaller and make your tefillin smaller and make everybody so crazy? Just wear the big tikkun and then stick the tefillin on top. So the fact that you can't put the tefillin underneath it, so that I understand, because the Gemara learns that from Sukkim, that you're not allowed to have a hefsek between the big tikkun and the besar of the kohen. The Torah says, al besar levesham, shelo yedav rechetzet be'besar lebig dekohuna. So I understand you can't put the tefillin on and then stick the hat on top, but that's not going to work. But why don't you do the other way around? So put the hat on first, then put the tefillin on top. So there was a big machlokes that we showed him, why is that not an option? So the Rosh, in Hilchos Tefillin, the Bach Maseches Menachos writes, the answer to that problem is because you can't have a chatzitza for Hilchos Tefillin. The same way there's a din that you can't have a chatzitza for Big Dekuna, you can't have a chatzitza for Hilchos Tefillin. So now you're in a checkmate. To put the tefillin on first, to put the baguette on top, that's going to be a problem for the Big Dekuna. To put the baguette on first, and put the tefillin on top, that's going to disqualify the tefillin. It's a lazy brainer. That's why Rashi quotes from Chazal, how to be a little bit of a spot that was free of mitznefes, free of tzitz and everything, just to position the tefillin properly. So the Rosh brings this as one of his rayas that you see from here. There's a problem of a chatzitz and uchus tefillin. So strangely enough, it doesn't say anywhere in the Gemara. There's no Gemara, there's no Tanur Rabbanan, no sugya anywhere that says minayim that you can't have a chatzitz and uchus tefillin. So the Rosh put a raya from this Gemara. Otherwise, why are we drawing everybody a cup? Literally a cup. Why are we drawing one nuts? We should just put it on top of the mitznefes. So Zevin, you see from here, there's a bit of a chatzitz. How did Chazal figure this out? So the Rosh says, Bistama, they figured it out from the word al. The same way that the Tosha Rapeh says, by big dekuna, al besar means shalei debechaitzitz. So kshat meos al yadecha means you can't have a debechaitzitz. The problem, of course, is it doesn't say al by tefillin shal rosh. It only says by tefillin shal yad, but yeah, it's going on both. The Rosh understands that Chazal must have had this tradition that there's a chisaron of chatzitza both shal yad and shal rosh, notwithstanding the fact that it doesn't exactly say it in the Gemara for sure not. It doesn't even say explicitly in the Chumash that there's a bit of al vis-a-vis the tefillin shal rosh. But that's the shitas Rosh. Then the Rosh says, by extension, for tefillin shal yad, of other is a chatzitza. That's the shiloh. That's not even a sophic. Of course, there would be a problem of a chatzitza. So the Rashba disagrees with the Rosh. The Rashba says, hey, can't make him stop a new din, yesh mehai, and there's a chisaron of a chatzitza. The Rashba writes, if a guy's got something on his head, he wants to put it full on top of him, he has a banjo there, he wants to put it full on top of him, there's no problem whatsoever. The Rashba says, what's the problem? So here, there are different versions of what the Rashba would respond to this. So there's some Rishonim who say that the answer, what the Rashba would say to this problem is that the reason why you can't put the tefillin on top of the mitznefes is not because of chatzitza, it's because it's not going to work. It's not going to stay in place. It means logistically it's going to be a nightmare. The din is that tefillin have to be on your body, it has to be tied on. It has to be connected. It has to be tied on. There was a machlekes between Rabbeinu Elyon, Rabbeinu Tam. What does the words uksharta mean? One of the Taisus quotes in Chulin, the first parak, from one of the Taisus Rabbeinu Elyon, whose opinion was that every day when you come to shul, you have to tie it film. You have to mamish under the knot and tie the knot every single day. I come up to shul, you got to come 10 minutes early. This morning I came to a minyan. I wanted to have this early as possible minyan to daven, but the rav, and it wasn't my shul, but the rav told me that you got to be careful. You come late for this minyan, you're cooked. So it was a little tough because I took the car service took me from the shul, so my wife had to drive me to the shul to get there. So I had to wake her up at 5:30 in the morning. The rest time it's okay. She's Michael, but so she had to drive me. So until I got out, she got to get my stuff. You know it's like in the morning. So I pulled into the minyan 3 minutes after it was already started. So 3 minutes after I started, usually you walk in, you're hitting Rabbi Shmuel, and they were well into the halukas by then. I said, the rabbi told me it's fast, but this fast is fast. I mean, that was like a whole other level of fast. But anyway, whatever it was. So here, according to Rabbeinu Elyon, if you don't come to shul 20 minutes early, you're going to miss davening because you got to tie it full every single day. You got to get really, really quick at it. So Rabbeinu Tam says he never heard of such a thing. I always say Baruch Hashem for Rabbeinu Tam. And this one, otherwise, you know, we'll take 72 minutes at the Shabbos for this one. This would have been just like absolute nightmare. Every morning, you got to get up and tie it full in every day. You got to tell your Rashi tefillin, your Rabbeinu Tam tefillin. You got so many pairs of tefillin to tie. Just you spend the whole day tying it full. There would be no Hashadas problems. So we pass in Baruch Hashem like Rabbeinu Tam in this one again. There is a very, very strange story about Reb Chaim that there was a certain sefer that was once printed that it used to be a style of drush in the olden days where they were like the shittosos in the sense of that Moshe held like this and Korach held like that and Machlekes Rashi and Tosfos Machlekes Moshe and Paro all kind of you see that it's like Mishle Melech like on steroids. Like it was like all over the place in terms of this sheet held like this and Haman Achashverosh held like Tosfos and that one held like Mordechai Nes held like the Ram. Yeah, all these kind of like different drushes. So there was a certain sefer that put out that said that the machlekes of Tam and Belio was a machlekes between Moshe and Paro and Maislecha and Bitzalel and Moshe. I forgot about how the whole shul Torah went. So the only problem is that Moshe Rabbeinu ended up on the wrong team. That Moshe Rabbeinu ended up with Rabbeinu Elio. So this person went to Reb Chaim for a haskama. So Reb Chaim says, you can't print it. That's not because. How can it be? Moshe Rabbeinu was outvoted. He holds like the sheet that we don't hold like. That doesn't make any sense. The problem was, not like today, you just delete it off the computer. Everything already had gone to the printer, so they couldn't pull off that page. So the person printed the sefer, but he wrote with Reb Chaim's haskam, I think, and he wrote that Reb Chaim said that the whole sefer is a very good sefer, but this particular paragraph is apikorsos, so don't read it. So this story is written. This story appears in the Kisri of Reb Chaim al Hashas. So in the newer version, the Kisri of Reb Chaim al Hashas, so they have this story told. It says in the bottom that Reb Chaim said you're not allowed to believe this shtickle Torah, but it's in the sefer anyway because the publisher had it in. So it remained for history, but it's a strange part. Anyway, so we don't paskin like Reb Elio, but. What do we think Ukshata means? Ukshata means it's got to be tight, as Rebbeinu Tam says. You can't put on tefillin that's moving all over the place. You put it in your shalyan, it falls right off. That's not called the hunt. That's not called a kshira. You put your sharosh on, it's moving all over the place. That's not called uksharatim either. So that's what some Yisharim say, that if you're going to put your tefillin on top of the mitznefes, it's going to be moving all over the place. So that's no good. It's not that there's a din of chatzitza. Let's say you have a very, very thin thing. Shalom all the time. He has a little band-aid over here, and he has to put he has a bandage. He can't put the tefillin on directly onto the skin. So according to the Rosh, a big deal. So put it on. Either the chatzitza, who cares? Chatzitza doesn't pose a problem. So this machlek is the Rashi and the Rush. Why didn't the Kohen Gadol put the tefillin on top of the mitznefes? Now impacts us lemaisa, loch lemaisa. Was this a problem of hilchas chatzitza? Was this a problem of just logistically it's not going to fit? So lechera, you can look for a parallel discussion of this if you take a look at the Tilla Shel Yad. How did the Kohanim wear or not wear Tilla Shel Yad? So the same Gemara in the Sefer Bet Mitzvachim says. The Tilin Shel Yad was a checkmate. There's no way that a Kohen B'Shas Avodah could wear Tilin Shel Yad. Why? Because if he's going to put the tefillin underneath the shirt, that's going to disqualify the whole Avodah because he has a davar chaytetz b'besar lebena beged. So why doesn't he put the tefillin on top of his shirt? So then wear the ksoinis, and then he'll stick the tefillin on top of the ksoinis. Well, why is that so terrible? So it's unclear. So the Gemara never explains why. The Gemara just says the Kohanim B'Shas Avodah does it up to him. So why exactly are they potter? So the Rosh says, I'll tell you exactly the potter, because it's a chatzitza. because your mom can checkmate. To put the tefillin under the ksoinis, so that's going to disqualify the ksoinis. To put the tefillin on top of the ksoinis, that's going to disqualify the tefillin. So what do you do? Lays brayer. I have to do the avodah. I have to put the mitzvah. I got to go bring a korban tomet today. I don't have time for tefillin. I'll put on tefillin later if I have time later. But I have to bring the korban tomet. So mamele, you put it from shalyat. So that's a strange thing. The Gemara says in Zvachim that the kohanim b'shasav edosam wore tefillin shalrosh and didn't wear tefillin shalyat. But according to the Rashba, there's a big problem. According to the Rashba, why can't you just put on the ksonis and then put the tefillin on top of the ksonis? So the Magen Avraham says that this is based on a different word. This is based on, Gemara says in the end of the third brach of Menachos, that tefillin shayat is supposed to be v'mokam l'chola os v'ol l'achayim l'os. You don't put tefillin on over here, on top, the exposed part of your hand. You put it all the way on top, which is usually covered over by your sleeve, by your begadim. So comes the Magen Avraham and says, if you can have your tefillin exposed on top of your shirt sleeve, that's going to be a bitl of the din of l'chole also l'chem lios. That's a loaded statement, because the simple reading of the Gemara is that's not exactly what that din means altogether. But we'll leave that aside for another time, another place. But the Magen Avraham says that's the problem. So therefore, the Magen Avraham says, how did you solve the problem of l'chole also l'chem lios? Very simple. Just put another shirt on top of it. Let's say a guy's wearing a shirt and he puts a tefillin on top of his shirt sleeve. So says the Magen Avraham, nothing wrong with that. Just put your jacket on top of it. As long as the tefillin shayad are covered over, that's not a problem. According to the Rosh, it's possible to Torah because there's a chatzitza. But according to the Rosh, but there's no din of a chatzitza, so then l'chore, that shouldn't, it should be a very easy solution, just cover it over. So why didn't the Kohanim do that? So says the Magen Avraham, because then they would be yit to begadim. The Kohen's not allowed to wear more than four begadim. So a Kohen's only allowed to wear the four begadim. Let's say if a Kohen decides he wants to wear a yarmulke, so he's chayim misa b'shemayim for wearing a yarmulke when he does the avodah. You're not allowed. He wants to wear a pair of tzitzis. You're not allowed. You're only allowed to wear the four begadim, no more, no less. So the Magen Avraham says, by tefillin b'shas avodah, we're in this pickle. Let's say you have a person who, guy's got a broken arm. He's got it from the shoulder down, he's in a cast. So says the Magen Avraham, no big deal. Put the tefillin on top of the cast, and then take a shirt sleeve, take a jacket sleeve, take a sheet, and throw it on top of it, and it won't be a problem anymore of l'chol yos, l'chem yos. That's a very, very controversial Magen Avraham, whether that solves the problem. But the Rosh said, the whole thing doesn't get off the ground. The Rosh says, there's a problem of a chatzitza by big dekuna and by tefillin equally. So again, you have this major machlekes of Rishayim. We know there's a din of chatzitza by big dekuna, that's in the Farshas Gemara many places. Does that din carry over to tefillin also? So the Rosh says, absolutely, it's the same exact thing, the same parameters. And the Rashba says, there's no such din. And the fact that the Kohen Gadol had to have a special place to put his tefillin, that's because of a technicality, because it's going to be too loose if it's on top of the mitznefes. The fact that the Kohen didn't wear tefillin shalyad, that's because of a technical problem of the chaliyos, which cannot be rectified because of the chisorn of yitah begadim. But in terms of a chatzitza, there is no such thing. So in Shulchan Aruch, we try to be machmir this. We try very hard to avoid chatzitzas in uchus tefillin. Sometimes you have shasat chach, the guy's got bandages and maislach and cast, so you have to figure out what is, what's not, you know, with a bracha, without a bracha. There are details about this, but the ikaron, we try as hard as we can to avoid hilchas chatzitzas. So there was a fascinating discussion of the later acharonim about the following shaila relating to chatzitzas, which also has its roots back to Big Day Kahuna. There's a famous Mishnah Maseches Yuma, that when the Mishnah describes the Kohen Gadol going to the mikveh five times the day on Yom Kippur, so every time he comes out, it says, Olavin is tapik. He comes down and he dries himself with a towel. So the Mishnah Melech quotes Akash and said, Ma'ech patli that the Kohen Gadol dries. I have to tell you what the Kohen Gadol did every day, every minute of Yom Kippur. Why is that mentioned in the Mishnayos? So the Mishnah Melech says he thinks it's mentioned in the Mishnayos for the following reason, that it's to teach me a halacha, that if the Kohen Gadol would not have dried himself with a towel, that would have been a problem of doing the Aveda, because the water on his body would have been a chatzitza between himself and the Big Day Kahuna. Just as the Gemara says, you can't have other chatzitzas, you can't have a chatzitza of water either. Right. So the Mishnah Melech asks that himself, and it's against the Mishnah. The Mishnah says that a double lach is not a chatzitz, that if you have a liquid on your body, that's not considered to be a chatzitza. So the Mishnah Melech says, no, that's only true when you talk about chatzitza for tefillah, because chatzitza for tefillah, the word is that you can't have a davar chatzitz. The halacha was said that when you have a barrier, if something interfering between you and the water, that's a pogim, that's a poiso, that's a problem. So a davar lach is command alay, so we assume a davar lach doesn't pose a problem. But by Big Day Kahuna says the Mishnah Melech, it's a different fort legamre. It's not chatzitza as a poselis. It's a din, positively, you have to have al basaray. There's a halach, you have to have a tziruf between your beged and your body, and if you have something that's in between, so you're losing that positive requirement of al basaray. Says the Mishnah Melech, when you're dealing with the positive din of al basaray that governs Big Day Kahuna, so everything's a problem. Even double lach is considered to pose a problem. So that's the Chiddush Gadol of the Mishnah Melech. So some later Acharonim said, if that Mishnah Melech is right, then if the Rosh is right, then we're in a lot of trouble. Because the Rosh said that all the dinim of Chatzitza by Big Day Kahuna carry over to Tefillin because of the word Al, the whole Mokra, the Rosh is guessing. There's no Gemara anywhere and says this. No Intosh of Apedas to say explicitly that we learn now from the din of Al to Pasla Chatzitza. But the Rosh claims that must have been the Mokra. There is no other Mokra. The Rashba says that no Mokra, the din is not true. But the Rosh says the din is true, and this must be the Mokra, Al Besorah. So if the Mokra is Al Besorah, then the nature of the din is you need this tziruf between the Beged and the body. And anything and everything is going to disqualify that tziruf. So even a davalach is going to pose a problem. So this was the source of the famous chumrah that some achrenim had, that if your body is wet, so then you can't be yet to be tefillin. So a guy just took a shower. So everybody knows it's not such a good idea to take showers right before you put in your tefillin because it's not good. It's not healthy for the tefillin if you have hair. I used to be worried about that, but in the late years, Baruch Hashem, it's very easy for me to draw off my head. It doesn't take too long. But if you have a good head of hair, so then it's gonna do damage to your tefillin potentially. But say these achorim, forget about the damage. You're not yet to the mitzvah. Or let's say a guy gets to yeshiva early, wants to shoot some hoops before davening. So he comes at the davening, we'll sweat it up. That's a problem. So that's all the liquid is going to pose the chatzitza. Because if it would just be a din of chatzitza, davalach and a chaitzitz, but it's more than chatzitza, it's din of al-besorah. That was a chumrah, gabi chumrah, gabi chumrah. That's assuming the Mishnah Melech is right and assuming that the Rosh is right. So the emes lamito is that I don't think one really has to be chayshish with this chumrah. I'll tell you why. The Mishnah doesn't even. Doesn't anywhere quote this chumrah. So I think the reason why is Lefir is daiti. I didn't discover this, but I think it's a very good discovery. I've made the discovery that the Mishnah is against the Farshah Gemara. The Gemara in the end of the fifth parak on the Seches Pesachim talks about on Erev Pesach there was a lot of dam on the ritzvah of the Azara, and the Kohanim would walk around on the dam there. So the Gemara says, wait a second, there's a din. The Mishnah says that the feet of the Kohen have to touch the floor, have to touch the stones of the Azara, or else that disqualifies the entire Avodah. So the Gemara says, how could it be that there's blood on the floor of the Kohen stepping into the blood? It's a Davar HaChetzitz. The Gemara says, it was Lach, and Davar Lach in a Chetzitz. That din, that you have to have the Kohen's feet touching the floor of the Azara, so the Gemara says, in the second Berakot Zvachim, that's the same Halacha, that you have to have the goof of the Kohen touching the Big Dekuna. Just as the Big Dekuna are Davar Kadosh, so it has to be Al Besaro, so too, by Yomu Kiddush Azara, the Ritzpas Azara is a Davar Kadosh, so the Davar Kadosh has to be star after the goof of Kohen. So it's almost the same din. So if the Mishnah Melech is right, that any dinim that I learned out from Al Besaro automatically are a problem, even by Davar Lach, then the Gemara is wrong. I mean, you can't have the Mishnah Melech and the Gemara. So Mishnah Melech is great, but you have to choose between the two. So the Gemara says the favorish that vis-a-vis this din that you have to have Ala Ritzba, there's also a din of Ala Ritzba. Ala Ritzba, even a Davar Lach, is not considered to be a problem. So the Phineas diet, I think, to Raya Bush and Ala Tshuva, this Gemara, in the end of the fifth Brekha Psochim, against this whole razzle-dazzle shtukul Torah of the Mishnah Melech. So even though we are cheshish for the Rosh, that there are chetzitzas by Tefillin, so to say that one is a chetzitzah is very, very hard to accept. It's not such a great idea anyway, it's just going to damage the film, but one time probably not going to do too much serious damage. So we've did a lot of time to Hilchus Tefillin. We have just a little bit of time to Hilchus Tzitzis also. So there is a fascinating question that the Minchas Chinuch raises concerning one of the Big Day Kahuna as relates to Hilchus Tzitzis. So Mishnah Melech says that the Me'il that was worn by the Kohen Gadol, there was a Machlekes Rashi in the Rambam, what the Me'il looked like. So Rashi makes it sound like it was a long coat and it was closed on all ends, which is like a round on the bottom. And the Rambam has it as two different like sheets that were just kind of tied together. It's basically a four-cornered type of a garment. So the Mishnah Melech says, according to the Rambam, the Chareit should have tzitzis on it. And we don't find that. We don't know that the Kohen had to put tzitzis. It would have been a strange phenomenon. It would have been a kerach kind of a beggar, because the beggar shekulo tcheles. It was literally tcheles. So beggar shekulo tcheles, we don't pass the kerach. Maybe some safer in the Middle Ages thought we'd be passing. We don't pass the kerach. We're passing Moshe in this one. So, and all others. So why don't we ever find that there should be tzitzis on the me'il, according to Shittas Rambam? So Machas Chinuch suggests that maybe the reason is because the Kohen Gadol didn't own it. It was owned by the Beis HaMikdash. So the din is ksuscha, that in order to be chayiv in tzitzis min haTorah, so it has to belong to you. It has to be your talis. It has to be your beggar, talis she'ulas p'tura. There's a din with the Rabbanon that a talis she'ula becomes chayiv in tzitzis after 30 days, but whether that applies here or not is a different story, but midarais says pata legam, right? And therefore, says the Chassidic, he doesn't really think that anybody actually owned this. It was owned by Mammon Hektish, it was bought by the Hektish money, so he thinks it belonged to the Tzibah of Klai, so it wasn't really anyone's personal baggage, and therefore, we could breathe a sigh of relief, it's probably going to to be potter. So that din, that when you have these almost like tzibur kind of things, that gets very, very tricky. You know, where do you draw the line? At what point do you say that this is mamish not a moment hedyot, this is a moment hatzibur, and therefore it's not mine? Would you say the same thing for shuls? Probably not. We assume in Shulchan Aruch and Hilchos Tzitzis that if you have a shul talis, so then there's a question to Poskim whether does that apply only for paying members of the shul? Does it apply even for guests of the shul? Usually the minig is we assume anybody that the shul talisim are bought out. That's everybody that they're not just they're not mamun hatzibur totally. There is a big machlokes between the Sefer Aguda and the Ktzos as to who exactly owns shul property. Very fascinating machlokes. Who owns, who are the Bailim and the Mamunas in the shul? So the Sefer Aguda assumes that shul property is like Hektish property. It doesn't belong to anybody. So that wouldn't bode well for Chassitzis. Then according to this Mechaz Chinuch Shel Torah, if Hektish took up a garden, don't get Tzitzis, so then shul took up a garden, most shouldn't get Tzitzis. So the Ktzos says that the Sefer Aguda is not right. He says that the shul property is not Hektish. That's no such thing. He says shul property is Mamunas Shutfin. Whoever pays the bills, whoever pays the dues. So you're an owner, you own property for Shutfis. So we once had a fascinating shaila. Somebody once called me, a rough call me, like the day after Pesach in total panic mode, that the shul forgot to sell the chametz. The shul itself, not the balabam, the shul forgot to sell all the chametz in the shul. So I said, what's the big deal? You had a couple of boxes of some stale tom-tom crackers or something. So roll now, what's the big deal? So he said to me, Rabbi, I don't know about your shul. He obviously didn't know about my shul, but he said, we got a lot of other chametz stuff sitting behind the counters. It's worth a lot more than a couple of boxes of crackers. So we thought about it a little bit. So I said to him, I think Meikar Adin, you don't have to be worried. I think it's okay. Why? Because if you hold like the Sefer Aguda that it's Mamon Hektish, so then there's no dinner by Rabbi Matzah. The Isser of Chamash Mamon Pesach is only when there was an Isser of Bali Rabbi Matzah. So if you hold that shul property, it doesn't really belong to any individual, not Mamon Hashutfin, it's just some new corporation called Hektish, so then there's no by Rabbi Matzah. And if you hold that it's Mamon Hashutfin, so then it was covered in everybody else's Bechira. Because when a guy sells chametz, he always writes in that I'm selling chametz on any chametz that I have, even though he spells out where it is, but he usually writes in some line in there that says, and I've forgotten anywhere in the world that I have. So when Reuben, Shimon, Levi, and Yehuda, Mr. Kohen, Mr. Israel, Mr. Levi, also the chametz, so all the shul chametz was included in as well. So the b'diav, maybe you can make a case that the chametz wouldn't pose a problem. But I call upon him this idea that it's sometimes a little bit tricky to figure out who owns any given property. So we had the shaila a couple of months ago with the rally in Washington. One of the high schools called me, and they wanted the Talmidim to wear flags. So, whether you think that's a good idea, better than whatever you think about wearing flags in general. But they wanted them to wear the Israeli flags. So the shaila that was posed was, but the four corner begadim, it's a begat of chatzit tchelas. So too, we have to put the tzitzis on the flags or not. So I thought it's a strange tzitzis drive we're going to have. The night before the rally, everyone come and put tzitzis on the very modna. So we're going to start cutting off the corners of the flags, also very mudna. So I said to him, well, who owns these flags? So he said, well, the school bought the flags. So I said, what are you doing with them? So I said, we're going to give them to the students. I said, don't give them to the students. They should remain yours. They're school property, and the school is lending them to the Talmidim. So every Talmud is a Tal Shula. They're not going to stay in Washington for 30 days. It's for one day. So Tal Shula is part of the Beim Rator, Beim Rabban. So that's what I told them. So that's what I instructed them. So on the way, when I was on the bus down to Washington, so someone who was sitting, it was a couple sitting next to me. So he did my shiur a couple of years ago. So he was carrying a flag. He said, Rebbe, I want to wear the flag. He said, Apama Tzitzis. I said, I just gave him a whole shekel Torah for Pesach in one of the local schools. I told him it may be a problem. So I said, I don't think you should really wear it. Mamash belongs to you. I don't think you should wear it. So I turned around to his wife. I said, you could wear it if you want, though, I said, because we have makeup, women of tourists from the Mitzvah Tzitzis, so if you want. She did not like that story at all. Okay, anyway, back to our story. So this shaila, sometimes you have to figure out what's mom and a tzibah, what's not. Well, who belongs to what has its roots also in the Big Dikun. There's another, we'll close up with this one, another fascinating application of a Big Dikun Bizman Azeh. That is a story that appears in the Mordechai, in the back of Masechet Gittin, in the fifth parak of Gittin. So there's a whole sugya in the fifth parak of Gittin about the kiddushah, how you have to treat a kohen, the kiddushah. And there's Yerushalmi that says that mishtamish b'kohen mol, that if you ask a kohen to do work for you, so you're in violation of me'ilah. So the Mordechai quotes a story that happened, that Rabbi Natam had a Talmud who happened to be a kohen, and that Talmud poured water on Rabbi Natam. He helped Rabbi Natam wash the Dilsi Yadayim. So he's picking up the water, carrying the water, and helping him wash the Dilsi Yadayim. So a whole machlekes erupted between the Talmid of Rabbeinu Tam that some of the Talmid of Rabbeinu Tam asked his Rebbe, they asked Rabbeinu Tam, how can you do that? In Yerushalmi, Shtamish Mekayim Mol. So how could you, Rabbeinu Tam, Tam wasn't Mekayim, how can you let this other Kohen serve you? Why isn't that a violation of Mishtamish Mekayim Mol? So a whole machlekes erupted between the Talmid of Rabbeinu Tam. So it's in that Mordechai, where the Mordechai quotes one of the Talmid of Rabbeinu Tam, they quote the name of Rabbeinu Pei Tes Reish. That's how they spell his name, Pei Tes Reish. So in the Olam HaYeshivas, so they always pronounce Rabbeinu Peter. Nonsense. It was Rabbeinu Peter. His name was Peter. Peter was a Goyish name. It still is a Goyish name. And some of the Rishonim had Goyish names. The same way some of them were Rabbeinu Goyish names. So his name was Peter. And he was a Talmud, Rabbeinu Tam. But they can't be masking that. So they called him Peter. Why is that better? Petachamo, why is that? That's more mechubed than Peter. So whoever his name was, he got involved in this discussion. So Mordechai quotes with Rabbeinu Tam, Rabbeinu Peter, and all the other Talia Taisas are hopping around. This was the tumult in the yeshiva. So Rabbeinu Tam answered the question. Rabbeinu Tam looked his Talmidim straight in the face and he said, no, it's okay, because the Gemara says in the second parak of Zvachim that Bizman She'ein Bigdem Alem Im Kudnos Ablem. The Gemara says that if a Kohen does Avoda without Bigdem Kahuna, so that's like a Zar She'ovad. So he's Chaim Yisudei Shemayim, the Avod Shula, because without Bigdem Kahuna, the Kahuna, the Torah says that it's the wearing of the Bigdem Kahuna that really make the man. The clothes make the man, they make you into a Kohen. So the Rabbeinu Tam said that if you're not wearing Bigdem Kahuna, then you're not a Kohen. If you're not a Kohen, so then there's nothing to worry about. There's no Issur of Mishtamish B'Kohen Mol. So the Talmidim looked back to Rabbeinu Tam and said, well, that's it. So he can marry a Grusha now. So he can come with Tommy to the basic verse now, because he's not wearing Bigdem Kahuna. So B'Shasek Rabbeinu Tam. Rabbeinu Tam didn't answer the question. So there's machlekes as to why Rabbeinu Tam didn't answer the question. So there's always have this phenomena. Somebody says something, a great Gadol says something, somebody asks the Kasha, and the Gadol doesn't respond. So there are always two ways of understanding. Either because he thought the Kasha was so overwhelming, he realized that he made a mistake, or he thought the kasha was so ridiculous that he didn't bother wasting his time. He had other more important things. He had to go write Tyson. He had to go disprove Rabbeinu Eliyahu. You have to talk to him. He had a lot of things. Rabbeinu Tam had busy things to do with his life. So he had to. I always quote this that Rabbeinu Tam, the Rishonim, because Rabbeinu Tam was involved in money lending between the Goyim and the Jews. He was one of the middlemen. That's what the Tyson Kedushin of Gimel quotes a practice for Rabbeinu Tam, how he used to run his business in terms of collecting money from Goyim, etc. So Rabbeinu Tam had to make a pranosa. So I always tell my Tamini, think all Rabbeinu Tam did all day was just sit around and write Tyson, and all he did all day was just, he also had to make a pranosa. He learned a lot. Rabbeinu Tam doesn't need my support. But Rabbeinu Tam also had to make a little bit of a pranosa. So a couple of minutes a day, he had to lend money to Goyim to make a couple of dollars. So Rabbeinu Tam didn't bother answering his Talmud when he asked this Akasha. So why didn't he bother answering this Akasha? So there are two versions. Some say because Rabbeinu Tam thought it was such a bomb Akasha, Tachi made a mistake. So that's the pshat. So what's the answer to Akasha? So Tosis quotes, the Mordechai quotes the next part of the story, is that no, the real reason why it's but because of Mechila, because the Kohen is Meichel. So whenever the Kohen is Meichel, the Yisrael Kedashto doesn't apply, which is the loaded Machlokes, whether that's true or not. But others say that no, Rabbeinu Tam didn't bother answering the Akasha, because not because he was wrong, because the Talmidim didn't understand what he meant. Rabbeinu Tam meant a brisk avort. There are two dinim of Kahuna. There's a Kohen as part of the Beis HaMikdash. Kohen was called Klei HaMikdash. Like the Rambam writes, Hilchas Klei HaMikdash Va'Ovdim Bo. The Kohen is one of the utensils. He's one of the vessels of the Beis HaMikdash. So the Kohen has Kedusha as part of Kedushas HaMikdash, and he also has a din of Kedusha as Begvulin. Let's say it hasn't been a Beis HaMikdash in 2,000 years. The Kohen is still Kodesh. So comes Rabbeinu Tam in hell that this din of Mishtamish B'Kohen Mo. What kind of strange halach is that? Why are you chayv be'ila for using a Kohen? What does that have to do with me'ila? So the answer is because the Kohen is the shtik mikdash. So Kohen is part, he's like the Mizbeach, he's like the menorah, he's like the shulchan. He's part of the structure, part of the architecture of the base of mikdash. So a Kohen, if you use the Kohen for your personal purposes, that's like being mild behektish. So Rabbeinu Tam said that din, that a Kohen is like the base of mikdash, that's when he's wearing Bigdem Kahuna, because that's when he can do avodah. He's not wearing Bigdem Kahuna, so he's not part of the Beis HaMikdash. That doesn't mean he doesn't have Kedushas Kahuna vis-a-vis Grusha and Tumas Meis. What's that to do with Beis HaMikdash? The guy lives in Australia. He's not doing any avodah today. He still can't marry a Grusha. Because the din of a Kohen b'toras non-avodas HaMikdash, that has nothing to do with Bigdem Kahuna. That's where Rabbeinu Tam, he couldn't believe his Talmidim didn't chap, didn't understand that that's what he meant to say, so he never bothered answering the question. So whatever it is, at least this is one version, this Rabbeinu Tam, it's Pashas Pekudei that would potentially be a defense for why we're not so machmir about it, most people are not so careful about asking Kohanim to do favors for them. So one of the reasons they're relying on is this idea of Rabbeinu Tam, that it's not Kedushas in Aleim, even though of course it is Kedusha Lagavi other things, but vis-a-vis the Mikdash it's not. So again, so we touched a little bit, a couple of sugyas related to Bigdem Kahuna, just to try a little bit of Halach L'maisa that emanates from the Pashas Pekudei. Okay, stop.